You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Locked On Mets is free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. On today's show, we have another Mets victory to discuss as they swept the Washington Nationals two sweeps in a row. They went 6-0 on that homestand before the West Coast swing did exactly what they needed to do to pad the standings a little bit before facing the Dodgers. After talking about that game in the first segment, I want to really dive deep into this preview as the Dodgers and the Mets right now are the best two teams in the National League. This is a real measuring stick series for the Mets, so we have a lot to discuss. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing at JustBaseball.com, where I work as the managing editor. Now, Carlos Carrasco had a tough task at hand on Wednesday. It wasn't necessarily the Nationals lineup. It was pitching in a big league game with his dad in attendance for the first time. 11-year big league career, and finally his dad was able to see him pitch in person, and that is a lot of pressure if you're Carlos Carrasco. I remember when I was pitching as a kid growing up through travel baseball, you know, you would have those times where one of my cousins would come from out of town, or, you know, your aunt, your uncle, some of your friends from school, and those were always the toughest times to pitch because you know there's somebody in the crowd that's just not typically there. You know, I could pitch in front of my mom or my grandparents that were always at the games, that wasn't really a big deal. But when there was someone out of the ordinary in the crowd, you wanted to show off. You wanted to show out. You wanted to have a great performance. And I can't imagine how much that intensifies when you're Carlos Carrasco on the biggest of stages, you know, pitching at the most elite level. And your dad's out there watching you for the first time after so many years. So the fact that he had five scoreless innings in this outing is really a fantastic effort. I know the Nationals this series did not swing the bats well, but this is a team that does have capable hitters, and we've seen them, you know, pile on some runs in previous series. So this is really impressive that the Mets were able to close out this series with two shutouts. You know, great pitching behind Carrasco as well. But you look at this outing, and this is a typical Carlos Carrasco start this year. We've seen it a bunch where, you know, he'll give up a lot of hits or he'll walk a lot of guys and he'll have traffic on the bases, but he finds a way to work around that traffic. In the first inning, he worked around a walk. In the second inning, he worked around a single. In the third inning, he got two outs, and then he loaded the bases with three consecutive walks. First time in his career he had ever walked three consecutive batters, which again kind of adds to that idea that there was some extra pressure on him. He just wasn't quite right, but still made the big pitches and got out of all of the jams that he put himself into. In this spot with the bases loaded, he got a strikeout to end the inning. In the fourth inning, gets one out, then gives up two singles. There's runners at first and third. At that point, the game was still tied 0-0. No runs scratched by either team. And you had D. Gordon up, one of the toughest guys to possibly double up, and then Carrasco ends up doing exactly that, gets a hard hit ground ball to Luis Guillorme. We saw a taste of this the other night where he had this backhanded flip to Lindor. Once again, we saw it. He puts a lot of mustard on that flip. It's incredible to watch these two play up the middle together, and just an outstanding turn by Lindor. You get the huge double play to get out of that spot. And those are the little things too with Lindor and Guillorme that shows the value of defense. If you're the Phillies, right, and you got whatever it is, Bryson Stott and Johan Camargo up the middle, or at times, you know, when Didi wasn't hurt, you had him at shortstop. Those are the plays that aren't getting made that put a run on the board. So right there, the defense helps Carrasco. He gets out of that jam, and the Mets immediately score runs for him. D. Gordon was involved I'm in the bottom half of the inning helping the Mets out. You had J.D. Davis and Luis Guillorme both get on. Davis with the single, Guillorme with a walk. That put two runners on for Tomas Nito, who ended up being the real hero of the day. Carrasco got the game belt after the game, player of the game belt after the game, and his dad gave it to him. So that was really a special moment. Buck Showalter talked about it in his post-game presser, how much that really tugged at your heartstrings. He deserved it for sure with the outing he had, but Tomas Nito also really was worthy of that type of recognition. 4-for-4 on this day, and in this spot, he gets a base hit up the middle. D. Gordon playing center field, misplays the ball. That allows both runs to come around and score. Nito gets one RBI on that, the second one scored due to the error. But he wasn't done tacking on runs throughout the game. In the seventh inning, he started a rally with a hit, ended up on third base with less than two outs for Francisco Lindor, a spot that he has converted on in over 70% of his opportunities this year when he's had that runner on third with less than two outs. He gets the sacrifice fly. That made it 10 straight games for Francisco Lindor with at least one RBI. That is now the only other player in Mets history to have accomplished that feat outside of Mike Piazza. Piazza did it twice. He had a 15-game RBI streak and a 10-game RBI streak. The MLB record is 17 games. So Lindor getting in rarefied air. If he has one more game with an RBI, he'll have the second longest streak in Mets history alone. He'll pass that second 10-gamer for Piazza, and he'll be a couple behind Piazza for maybe the all-time franchise record. Just an incredible run, 20 RBIs during this 10-game span, really carrying the lineup. That tacked on one for the Mets, put them up 3-0. Nito came through again in the eighth, driving in two with a double. So 4-for-4, a run scored, 3 RBIs. Great game by him, really raising his average, his OPS, everything in this one. So you love to see it. He got 3 consecutive starts in a row in this series, and the Mets pitched 2 shutouts to him in the final 2 games. When it comes to Carrasco, he worked around 2 runners again in the fifth, walked a batter with 2 outs, gave up a double, but ends up stranding them both in scoring position. All told, 5 innings pitched for Carlos Carrasco, 5 walks, 5 strikeouts, 4 hits allowed, no runs, lowered his season ERA to 3.63. From there, Seth Lugo came on. He was great. 2 innings pitch, allowed just 1 hit, no walks, 1 strikeout, no earned runs. Adam Ottavino comes on. He gives up a hit. He walks a batter, so you're thinking, okay, here we go. 3-0 Mets, 2 runners on. Are they going to drop the ball here and maybe let this series sweep, slip through their fingers? And then Ottavino does the Jeurys Familia thing where he strikes out the next 2 batters and gets the final out to strand those runners that he let on base to hold it. The Mets got those 2 runs from Nito, so they're up 5-0, but Edwin Diaz had already warmed up, so Buck Showalter sent him out there anyway. He closed the game out, 2 strikeouts and a perfect ninth inning. The Mets are now 35-17 on the year. They're 18 games over 500 on June 1st. And thinking about this team, I believe that we're starting to get to the territory where fans can maybe drop some of the anxiety, some of the pessimism, some of that, carry over from last season, because I know there's still the fans out there that think, last year the Mets were in first place for almost 100 days. It was 90 days in first, and they were so great, and then it all fell apart, and we can't count out that happening again, and the Braves somehow getting back into this division. I understand that apprehension. I do. But what we've watched so far is so far removed from what we saw last year that I think you can start to understand and accept that this team really is a powerhouse. Last year, on June 1st, the New York Mets were 27-21. That was a time where they were in first place for 24 consecutive games at that point, and that held through 90 days. Their biggest division lead in that 90-game span where they controlled the National League East was 5.5 games. Right now, currently, their division lead is double that at 11 games. Granted, have the Braves played yet today? I don't know if the Braves have. They're winning 5-0, so that could drop to 10.5, but the point still stands. A double-digit lead in the division on June 1st. That's just something the Mets did not have last year, and we talked all last season about that. There was so many times after games where Pete Alonso and others would say, look, we're still in first place. We have control of this division. We're winning series. We're doing what we're supposed to, but they were never putting their foot down
on the throat of the opposition. They were never sweeping series, as we've seen now them sweep two series in a row. They weren't stringing together this many series victories in a row, and they certainly weren't 18 games over 500 within a 10.5 or 11-game lead in the division in the beginning of June. This is different. This team is on another level. In my opinion, right now, they're clearly the 1B to the Dodgers 1A in the National League, and that is why this upcoming series is so exciting. I want to talk about the year the Dodgers have had in the next segment, and then we'll close out the show today talking about the projected pitching probables. It's going to be four really exciting games that kick off Thursday night. So we're going to discuss all of that. But this episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts your car will need. So why endure the often pointless and seemingly intimidating question while the person behind the counter is just looking up the parts on their computer and only are looking at the brands that their warehouse happens to carry, when instead you can visit rockauto.com, shop from hundreds of manufacturers, save 30%, 50%, maybe even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store or new car dealership. Rock Auto is a family business that has been serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for every customer, so go explore their easy-to-use website today and find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, and make sure you're right locked on in there. How'd you hear about us box? So they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. As I record right now at 5:55 Eastern time, the New York Mets have scored more runs than any team in baseball with 271. The Dodgers are right behind at 270, and they have yet to play today. So I'd imagine they will pass that. But it still stands that these are the best two offenses in baseball. The third best right now in runs scored is the Giants at 244. That's a pretty wide gap here. You look at OPS for the season, the Dodgers at 767 had the best OPS in baseball as a team. The Mets right behind at 750. You look at pitching. The Dodgers at 276, team ERA is the best in baseball. The Mets 363, 10th best. This Dodgers team is still the best team in baseball. They just are. And what's crazy about the Dodgers is you look at their top three players right now. It's not homegrown guys. It is guys that they have poached from other teams over the last couple of years. Mookie Betts, a guy that never should have left Boston, he's right now on an absolute tear. Hitting .298 for the season, .387 on base, .601 slugging. He's leading the National League with 15 home runs, leads all of baseball with 50 runs scored, and that really is a jaw-dropping stat when you consider the second place person when it comes to leading the league in runs is Aaron Judge at 39. So 50 runs is a lot. That's what happens when you're getting on base a ton in front of guys like Freddie Freeman and Trey Turner. They're going to drive you in a bunch. His 3.3 F4 is just 1 point behind Manny Machado at 3.4. So Mookie Betts squarely in the MVP conversation. And over his last 13 games, he's hitting .392. .475 on base, .922 slugging, 7 home runs, 6 doubles, 13 extra base hits in 13 games. It's pretty good. Then you have Freddie Freeman, a guy that they just signed this offseason because the Braves decided, we could keep our first baseman. We could give him a 6-year deal, or we can trade for Matt Olson, give him an 8-year deal at a cheaper rate. Now, granted, the contracts certainly make that a win of a trade for the Braves. But I will still say that you look at the numbers right now, and Freddie Freeman's having a better year than Matt Olson, and you wouldn't have had to give up all those prospects to hold on to Freeman. So as much as Alex Anthopoulos was praised for the trade of Matt Olson and pivoting away from Freddie Freeman, I think that that move got maybe a little bit too much credit in that it still showed a sense of cheapness by that organization where they could have just kept their leader. And I do think that right now, if Freddie Freeman was on the Braves, I bet their record's better. And so I'm very happy with the move they went there. But It also made the Dodgers even more of a juggernaut this year. Freeman's hitting 303, 395 on base, 479 slugging. His 19 doubles trail only Matt Olson for the National League lead. But when you have Betts, when you have Freeman, you also have Trey Turner, who's hitting 298 this year, 357 on base, 461 slugging. He has 41 RBIs, one of five players in baseball to reach the 40 RBI plateau at this point. Lindor and Pete Alonso are two others of that list. But those three are dynamic and really carrying this team right now. There's really not another batter in this lineup that stands out. Chris Taylor, I believe, is fourth in OPS on this roster right now. So it is kind of interesting that here's this team that's heralded for their farm system and the way they've produced guys like Cody Bellinger and, supposedly Gavin Lux and Will Smith and others. but it's their ability to take their farm system and turn it into players like Betts and Turner, and then to go out and sign a Freddie Freeman that has them in the position they're at right now. It is insane to think that you would get those three players in the matter of a two and a half year span. And all of them now are your top performers. I am curious to see how the Mets progress over the next couple of years, because right now, Francisco Lindor, you could argue clearly a top three performer on the Mets. Really, the top two on this team right now is Pete Alonso and Francisco Lindor. I wonder who's the next big addition the Mets make. Can they get another top 20 player in baseball over the next couple off seasons? That's something that I think is always in play with Steve Cohen. And it's going to be interesting to watch these two teams in particular maybe form a rivalry now. If this is the season where the Mets come into their own, could we see the Dodgers and the Mets squaring off in NLCS after NLCS, really fighting it out for the top players on the market in trades and free agent signings? That is the gold standard that Steve Cohen wants to reach. We always heard the East Coast Dodgers thing. We'll see if the Mets can really sustain this. This is just year one of what seems like a new era of Mets baseball. But the Dodgers are a well-oiled machine, and you're going to see that firsthand this weekend. I want to discuss the pitching matchups next. The Dodgers play things close to the vest. They have not announced any, but I'll give you my best guess on the arms that we will see. The Mets have announced three of their four starters, Trevor Williams, likely to be that fourth one. We're going to go through all those matchups in just a minute. Whether you're ready to pop the question or you're celebrating a milestone moment, find jewelry as unique as her with the modern convenience of online shopping at BlueNile.com, where you can build the engagement ring of her dreams. Blue Nile has simple online tools that let you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as the setting style. Blue Nile's bench jewelers will then handcraft her perfect engagement ring. Each ring is one of a kind. Life's special moments should be celebrated with fine jewelry, and Blue Nile has jewelry experts on hand 24/7 that are available via phone or chat to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On Mets listeners get $50 off, $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement rings. Use the code Locked On. Again, that's code Locked On. Plus, every order is insured, ships free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever peace by going to BlueNile.com today. So again, the Los Angeles Dodgers have yet to announce any of their probable pitchers, but if we do the math on the guys that have started, it's likely that they're going to go Tony Gonsolin, Tyler Anderson, Walker Buehler, and Julio Urias. And the reason why I say that is the likely starters is because at times they'll go to a six-man rotation. Other times they go with a five-man rotation. But if I'm the Dodgers strategizing this series, I want to make sure I get Urias into this four-game set because the Mets have struggled against lefties. So by going with Gonsolin to Anderson, to Buehler, to Urias, you can get your best two starters in this series. And I do think they will prioritize that with getting Buehler and Urias to close out the four-game set. But it will start with Tony Gonsolin, who is on an absolute tear this season. He's made 9 starts. He has a 1.80 ERA. His own record is 5-0. He has a career 2.59 ERA. So this is a guy that has just been in Los Angeles with the Dodgers, and you scratch your head. You don't know who it is. Yet every year he puts up good numbers. And this year he's not given up more than 2 runs in any start. He went at least 5 in all of 5 of his starts in May. It's going to be a tough matchup for the Mets, but it's a right-handed pitcher, and the way this lineup is clicking, I think they can put some runs on Gonsolin, maybe give him his worst start of the year. When it comes to who's throwing for the Mets, though, you got Taijuan Walker. Walker has a 2.83 ERA in 8 starts. Now, he has not been a great strikeout pitcher. He's going and facing a team with Betts, with Freeman, with Turner, even with other guys that can turn on pitches like Justin Turner and Max Muncy and Cody Bellinger, even though they're not off to the best of starts this year. For a contact pitcher, I'm going to be very curious how Taijuan Walker fares. You might know that I had never been the biggest defender of Walker coming into this season. I wasn't sure how long he would hold on to a spot in the rotation. He has done a great job so far, proving me wrong. He's been very solid. But with the lack of swing and miss stuff, I do wonder when that's going to catch up to him. I would hope that the Mets go defense first with their lineup behind him. You got to have Guillorme in the field, I believe, as well as Jeff McNeil. Maybe this is an opportunity for Eduardo Escobar to get off his feet in DH. Or if you want, maybe sit Escobar for a game, have Nick Plummer start as the DH with Canna and Nemo and Marte in the outfield. A lot of ways they can play this, but I think you got to go defense first, particularly for this outing. Game 2 will be Chris Bassitt versus Tyler Anderson. You might remember Tyler Anderson was with the Pirates last year, someone that I talked a lot about because I thought he was a good trade target for the Mets. And that was a completely different pitcher because now that he's with the Dodgers, suddenly instead of being a 4.5 ERA guy, he's a 2.90 ERA guy with 48 strikeouts and 49 2/3 innings pitched. He's had 9 appearances this year. The first 2, he came out of the bullpen, still gave them length. The last 7 all starts. He's currently on a 20-inning scoreless streak, so the Mets have to fare against that. Could mean that he's primed to give up runs. We did just see the Mets do pretty good against Patrick Corbin. They also did all right against the lefty going for the Nationals today, the rookie, whose name is escaping me at the moment. But still, I'm curious how they'll face off against Tyler Anderson because he doesn't have the stuff that would scare you, yet he's suddenly a Dodger putting up better numbers than ever before. His worst start of the season did come against the Phillies. He gave up 7 earned runs, so if they were able to pile on runs against him, why can't the Mets? But the left-handed thing always jumps out with this current team. They're going to have to do more than just beat up on Patrick Corbin to disprove that scouting report that's out against them right now. Now, he's going to be going up against Chris Bassitt, who has a 3.66 ERA on the season. But if you take out those 2 starts against the Giants, it's a 1.82 ERA. Hopefully, that stands true, where only the Giants are his Achilles heel, but this will be clearly the best lineup he's faced off against this season. The Mets don't have the best matchup on Saturday if things, you know, hold the way I believe they will, where Walker Buehler would take on David Peterson. Buehler, 3.22 ERA in the year on across 10 starts, although he has struggled over his last 4, pitching to a 5.32 ERA. He has been the Dodgers' ace, so we'll see what ends up happening with Buehler. Will he break that string of bad starts against the Mets, or can the Mets make it worse for him and really pile on runs against a great starting pitcher? And Peterson, that's a tough task. You know, he's a 3.03 ERA in the season. He's been really good, but again, really tough lineup. The final matchup, likely Julio Urías against Trevor Williams. Urías, 2.89 ERA over 10 starts this year. Williams, 3.58 ERA. Numbers look pretty good for Williams, but look, not a great matchup. If we boil it down, the Mets pretty much only have a clear edge in the second game, I think, where it's Bassitt versus Tyler Anderson. I think Gonsolin, Taijuan Walker, you feel pretty decent about your opportunity there, but you know the pitching matchups don't favor the Mets. This isn't the series that I think we all really want to see, which is Max Scherzer going up against Walker Buehler and DeGrom against Urías and Bassitt versus Clayton Kershaw, who I believe is hurt as well, if I'm not mistaken. Let me look that up really quick. Yes, he is on the injured list, about to begin a rehab assignment. So that's the series we all want to watch. It is crazy to think that they're getting this elite performance from Gonsolin and from Anderson. They just continue to find different starters. It's like their rotation is 10 deep, where Kershaw can go down and they just keep on rolling. The Mets have done that as well, but they haven't quite gotten the same type of performance from their substitutes as the Dodgers maybe have. And we'll see if they can hold up. We'll see if Peterson and Williams can do a great job against a really good team. I think the Mets have to rely on their defense. Hopefully, with good defense, good pitching out of the bullpen, if this offense can keep humming, maybe the Mets can surprise us and take three games this weekend. Overall, I think the aim would be try to split it, right? You split a four-game set with the Dodgers, you're feeling pretty good about yourself. Then if you can win one of those next two series against the Padres and the Angels, you're going to have a really successful West Coast trip. I won't count out this Mets team from winning every single one of these series because that's how good they've been this year. But you also have to understand that at some point this season, the Mets are going to go through their skids. Schedule-wise, this appears to be the first real potential road bump that they're going to go through. But because they just won those six games, they've already packed themselves with a great cushion that you imagine they're going to come out of this stretch and still have a comfortable lead in this division, and you'll move on from there. You also have the impending return of Tyler McGill and Jacob deGrom around the corner as well. That's going to give this team a big boost following this trip. So the Mets are in prime position here. We'll see how they fare in game one late Thursday night. Not looking forward to these 10 o'clock and 9:30 Eastern time starts. But hey, if you're a Mets fan, the one thing I'll tell you is at least you don't have to record a podcast after it. I'll be up later than you, but I am happy to do it to give you your daily coverage of the New York Mets Monday through Friday. We got one more show for you this week. We'll do our Friday Farm Report tomorrow and break down that first game of the series against the Dodgers. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. Thank you for making Locked On Mets your first listen every day. Now for your second listen, check out Locked On MLB, hosted by Paul Francis Sullivan, but we call him Sully. Locked On MLB is where you want to go to stay today with everything going on in Major League Baseball. You can follow Locked On MLB wherever you get podcasts.